Mr. Pop.
I feel so welcome each time that I return, like those simpler times from not that long ago. I love those dear hearts and gentle ponies, true friends, no matter where you go.
Children, this is your number one Andalusian of the airwaves, DJ Pony. In case you weren't listening last time, I premiered a new segment that will air in this Sunday evening block whenever we have an episode. However, you'll have to forgive me if I end up rerunning it as well. At least it gives more ponies a chance to listen to it. Because you don't want to miss the next episode of Confessions of a Wasteland Pony, the new interview series where we talk to you, the everyday mares and stallions of the equestrian wasteland. Last time, we interviewed Battered Blade, the X-Raider who told her touching story of growing up in probably the worst home life you can imagine, and her harrowing tale of personal redemption. Unfortunately, a few of the residents of Ten Pony Tower weren't pleased with the fact that a former raider walked amongst them and made their complaints known after the show. Honestly, I'd be more upset, but there's just no talking to some ponies. So I'm having my assistant Homage look into possible off-site locations for use for the undesirable ponies in the future. Whose moving stories will tug at your very heartstrings in a way that fancy pants snobs just can't. But until then, buck 'em, because our next guest is a rotting talking corpse. No offense, Doctor.
It's hard to argue with the truth.
If I weren't looking at you with my own eyes, I'd say you were dead. Or a light bulb. Exactly how many of those glowing patches do you have?
Ah, you see, that is a very common misconception that the dermis is the bioluminescent organ. In fact, if you do happen to see a glowing ghoul, it is not their skin that glows, but their blood. Every artery, vein, and capillary carry the same isotopic glow of Kleidenkopf radiation.
You know, at first I didn't think you were a threat, but everything about that sentence scared me.
Ah, yes. You should be scared. Ooh, brr, ah.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Strahlung Greenshift.
It is a true joy to be here. I listen to your station at all hours of the day.
Well, we are one of the only stations that doesn't play old marching music, or even better, slaver propaganda.
Yes, the pickings are slim indeed. But the music you play brings me back to better times, when the sun still shined and the Equestria was in a true golden age.
Careful now, you're going to show your own age if you remember that far back. Just how old are you?
You know, somewhere I lost track around 250.
That's amazing. You're probably one of the oldest ponies in the world now. I'm pretty sure that means that we can all refer to you as Grandpa.
Oh, I take that as a compliment. I love children.
You do seem like the fatherly type. Do you have any of your own?
Oh, no, no. I was married to my job, so to speak. However, I had more nieces and nephews than I could carry. I was from a big family, you see. Lots of brothers and sisters. It was quite common where I grew up.
You come from Dusselhoof, if I still know my accents.
Ah, yes I do. Beautiful countryside on the eastern slopes of the Royal Mountains. Despite mostly knowing the common tongue, we never did lose our pre-equestrian manner of speech. What is the present if it fails to stand sturdily on the foundations of the past?
Well, chaos is the first word I'd choose, but luckily we have your 2.5 centuries of experience to help us out. First off, what are you a doctor of?
Ah. I am educated and experienced in biology and diagnostic medicine.
Educated? So you have a degree, and don't just call yourself a doctor because you've been sawing off limbs for years and seem to be good at it?
Well, Why not both? But yes, after receiving my degree, I worked for 25 years at the hospital there in Düsselhof.
25 years? So you already had a decently long life even before the bombs fell.
Yes, I did. In fact, I opted to return to my alma mater when I retired to teach while pursuing my own research projects.
And this is all while the Great War is going on?
Yes, it was. The new ministries were formed about 2 years into my retirement. You must understand, though, that the ponies of Düsselhof were always having a tendency for isolation. We didn't pay the war much mind at all. We went about our lives, read the occasional sad headline, distanced ourselves, and moved on. In retrospect, I see how foolish it was to think that we were somehow saved or apart from the motherland just because we had maintained our individual identity. It wasn't until the Stapletech pony arrived that things began to impact us.
What do you mean?
One of their corporate representatives, a brown earth pony mare with magenta mane and fierce, determined green eyes. She met with our city council one day to discuss the construction of a stable. The council ponies were hesitant at first, especially with her New Yorker charisma and force of will. But soon she was able to convince them that without a stable, there was a chance our entire culture could be lost to history in a single flash.
Well, I guess nothing sells a product like, buy this or you're all gonna die.
Oh, but it worked. The council then decided that the place to focus its preservation efforts on should be the university. They figured that it was the best way to preserve our heritage. And I swear, it wasn't a week later that construction materials began flowing in by the train car load. The foundation was excavated opposite the main hall of Blackwood University, within the view of my office window. I saw the entirety of the project first hoof. In a mere 4 months, they were planting the sod grass and bringing the last of the materials through the door.
They built the entire thing in only 4 months? Even with prefabricated materials, that's quite a feat.
Well, Stapletech was one of the largest companies in the world. They definitely had the resources, even to make it up the mountains to a little village. Soon, Stable 76 was complete. And then they began selling the space for those who wished to purchase themselves the ultimate insurance policy.
Did you purchase one?
Oh, heavens no. I was an aging stallion. I had lived a long and fulfilling life. Those spaces were for the young who still had a life to live.
That's a noble perspective.
It was the right thing to do, I thought. But then, to my surprise, I received a letter anyway.
You're kidding.
No. They wanted me to be a part of the stable's medical team because of my years of learning and experience. It was a reasonable argument, but not when considering the younger and brighter wunderkinds that filled the Blackwood halls. I went to their local office to talk to the New Yorker mayor about it.
But once again, she had the stronger will?
Indeed. She convinced me that as the most senior member of the medical research staff, my knowledge and skills would be invaluable to continue teaching the future generations. I remember commenting snarkily that I'd probably drop dead from a heart attack before I could make it through the door. But I walked out of her office with a badge and a retainer check. I was now an employee of the Stapletech Corporation.
So were they hiring other members of the university?
Oh, yes, a great deal. Our overmayor, in fact, was a political science professor. That's, in a way, where things started to go wrong.
How do you mean?
Well, this mayor, she was a sweet girl. Tulip Blossom. Tulip Blossom, her name was. She went to work straight out of graduate school and into teaching as a professor. This was all well and good, being able to hold interesting philosophical discussions about Düsselhof's history both before and after the Christian expansion. All of her knowledge was in books, scrolls, papers, documents. She had never served as an ambassador. She had never seen nor studied abroad to see the world as it truly was. She could talk about and about the Zebra Kaiser, and how the policies of the two nations had become completely incompatible. But just like the rest of us, she was too far detached from the horrors of the war. On the days the sirens began to ring, I found her in the hallway, visibly shaken as she'd glanced around the corridors as everyone galloped around her. If I had not thrown her on my back, I think she would not have left that spot.
You saved her life.
It is a doctor's duty.
So she clearly wasn't prepared for this kind of responsibility. How did she end up as your overmare?
The unfortunate result of two very different groups of ponies agreeing on something. The council only agreed to the stable project if they could have the final stay on the ponies that would staff it, to preserve our culture and traditions and blah blah blah. So of course they thought that Tulip, who was literally a living encyclopedia of Dusselhoof for the past 2,000 years, should hold the highest political office. They paid no mind to choose someone with actual leadership qualities to lead the small group of ponies in a closed space environment after most of their families and friends had been consumed in magical fire. The poor girl. No amount of enthusiasm could have prepared her for the task. She reminded me a lot of the Ministry of Peace, Mayor. She was naive, believed too strongly in the goodness of ponies. When she heard the sirens and seen the impacts in the distance, something snapped.
What do you mean, snapped?
Once we were inside, when the stable door was closed, Tulip just sat there in the entrance corridor, staring at it. I tried talking to her. We all did. But she really didn't say much of anything after that. She would sit there all hours of the day until someone pulled her away to feed her or take her to bed.
The reality of the war was too much for some to handle. How did the others in Stable 76 react?
Things were actually okay for a while. Everyone knew about Tulip's state of mind, of course, but each of us individual section leaders were able to keep everything functioning and under control for the moment. We ran the stable as a council, just like we had in the world before. But then something much worse happened.
TJ, do you know about how the stables are organized?
Well, I've seen the layouts for a few of them.
Well, Stable 76 was quite unique. It was outfitted with a so-called Clipper Magical Energy Generator, which stood for Crystalline Liquid Inertial Propulsion Reactor. Many stables were being outfitted with similar units, but we were told that Stable 76 was constructed around the largest one they'd ever produced. It was about 4 times larger, with 100 times the amount of fuel. The Splendid Valley facility sent enough barrels of the liquid crystal to satisfy even a Dragon King. At least, that's how the engineers described it to me. They were told that it would power us for thousands of years, and said it could have untold usefulness for rebuilding civilization in the new world.
I don't like where this is going.
You don't have to be as bright as me to figure that out. One day, about 3 months after Doomsday, we all heard a loud boom echo through the hallways. We immediately scrambled to see what was going on. That is when we got a call from our chief engineer that one of the shielding manifolds had undergone critical decompression, which is scientific speak for the top of one of the damn fuel tanks exploded. I could hear the loud, fast-paced clicking on the red counter from over the intercom. He said that one of the bugs had already died, and he was sealing off the level.
By the goddesses!
We didn't know what to do. His team was doing all they could to contain the leak. But we couldn't just sit around. We searched through all of the files and procedure manuals we could, but couldn't find anything useful that the engineers weren't already trying. Until we saw the list of the mainframe's administrative permissions. Near the bottom of the list was the communication line for StableTech's Central Installation Command. It was the main operations center for all the stables. They were there to provide everything from technical support to a master spell matrix to emergency situation assistance.
and clearly critical reactor failure qualified.
But the problem was, only the Overmayor could establish the communications.
Why hadn't you just replaced Tulip with someone else?
We couldn't. While the system was built to transfer control in event of unforeseen death of the Overmayor, that didn't include the initial login for the first Overmayor,
the one hardwired in by StableTech,
must activate the system herself. They said it had something to do with preventing sabotage or some such horseshit. So the damned apocalypse was a pretty high-risk situation. They reasoned that if the Overmayor was dead, probably the rest of us were too. We even had to hold Tulip's hoof up to control the panel just to get the damn door to close. Unfortunately, we couldn't just do that again here, because we also needed her password.
So your only hope for help was to snap her out of her trance?
Yes, which we've already been doing. Our lead psychiatrist, Dr. Copper, had done everything known to medical science. Her obvious fixation was with what was behind that damned door. Very early on, we told her that if she came with us and logged into the computer, we could open the door to see. Which we couldn't have let her do, of course. We originally just planned to get her to put in the password, and then we would elect the new Overmayor from there. But now, taking our chances on the surface was a much more viable option. Tulip, she cried. There's been an accident. You need to access the mainframe. They're going to die down there. Dr. Copper even gave her a few hard slaps, but still no response.
What do you mean, no response? Not even pain? You said she'd return there if you took her away, so she must have had some faculty about her.
She would fall asleep there if we did nothing, but we just couldn't break through to her. If you looked into her eyes, you would have understood. They were filled with the same horror and fear that I had seen in her in the hallway on that final day. She was still seeing the explosions, the death, the destruction. It was like a waking nightmare.
How awful, to be trapped in your own mind like that. So even though she survived the bombs physically unscathed, they'd consumed her mind beyond repair.
It was no use. Everything we did failed. I even tried using different drugs on her, but nothing worked. Then, we started hearing screaming from over the intercoms, and just like that, the whole stable went into full panic. A few of them had started to turn on Tulip, looking for something they could lash out their fear and anger on. They were so close to becoming a mob, but I couldn't let that happen to her. She had been through enough. We all lied and said that Tulip couldn't do anything anyway, because the reactor failure had shut down the power to the door and sections of the mainframe.
Hold on, you had to lie about that? Part of your reactor had exploded, but you weren't experiencing any power issues?
Strangely, no. Everything was running just like it should. We didn't even know what had caused the damage in the first place. Days had passed since we had tried the intercom. The screaming had stopped, but now, it was just silence. As far as we knew, the area was flooded with radiation and all of them are dead. Unfortunately, only one of that was true. About a week after the silence, we were making plans for long-term function when the speaker came to life again.
Hello? Is anyone still there?
The stallion said.
Please, I'm still alive. Someone help me. There are others too.
Suddenly, they had to make a decision.
Did you think you could save them?
They were still in a highly irradiated environment, so even if we got them out, we needed to be able to clean them off before we could treat them or bring them near any of the others. Even opening one entrance to the level was highly risky, but we had to try. We could not just simply leave them to their deaths if there was still a chance. Plus, admittedly, I was already very curious that any of them were still alive. The doses they were exposed to should have killed them in a matter of hours, at the points when, well, they'd heard the screaming.
So what was the plan?
We decided to use the maintenance stairwell. It had decontamination rooms connecting to the reactor space. Now that the reactor's hazard sirens had been deactivated, we could still use that antechamber to pass into and out of the level without violating the radiological seal. We could bring a few survivors through there, where they'd be cleaned on the outside and rush them to the medical lab. Myself and two of the medical ponies suited up in full magical radiation suits. We planned on getting all of the survivors out into the stairwell as quickly as possible before resealing the area. We descended down into the reactor level, making sure all of the pneumatic doors in the shaft were sealed. When we opened the bottom door, we saw the stallion leaning against the wall where the intercom was. He turned with eyes full of gratefulness and relief. On the far wall behind him was a bright and radiant glow of the reactor. The main ignition chamber stood nearly 3 stories tall, as large as a grain silo. The pulsing cylinder mechanism inside of it thumped like a beating heart. Several of the fuel tanks stood behind it, one of which was nearly empty with a gaping hole in the pumping assembly above it.
Did you see anything wrong with it? Could you tell what had caused the rupture?
Sadly, I had no idea. The glowing liquid covered most of the floor below the reactor and had filled the whole space with a sick haze. The bodies of the dead were strewn across the wall farthest from the reactor, some of them thrown by the explosion. Many more were slouched against the doors trying to get out. On the command platform lie the lifeless body of the chief engineer, his hoof still on the emergency switch. Then, we saw the other survivors the Stallion had mentioned. There were 5 of them, standing dumbfounded in a huddle in one corner off to the side. Everything seemed stable enough, so we went inside. But as soon as we walked through the door, the emergency alarm above the door started sounding, and it quickly slid shut. Bright yellow lights began spinning around the base of the reactor as the noxious machine began pulsing erratically out of rhythm.
It began failing again the moment you went down there?
An unusual coincidence, isn't it? The ponies in the corner all immediately turned to face us. Most of their hair was gone, coat, mane, and tail. The flesh was bubbly and burnt, as if they had taken a shower in boiling acid. For a moment, we looked at each other, but behind their eyes was a hollowness, an emptiness. There were no souls left inside, nothing above the most baser instincts driving them. We were realizing with every passing second what was about to happen. We were frozen beneath the door's siren as they were creeping ever so closer towards us. It wasn't until one of them sniffed the air and started to growl that one of my nurses started screaming and galloped towards the control box stairwell. The stallion from the intercom seemed just as scared and surprised.
Surprised? Like they hadn't acted that way before the three of you showed up?
Precisely. I think that before they caught our scent, they had just trotted aimlessly around the room since the incident. The stallion that called us, who had regained full mental function, was likely in a short coma for that reek. He began running away with the nurse as I ascended up the chief's platform. My assistant and I tried to follow, but the three of the ghouls had already cut us off and were closing in fast. Before I could act, he darted towards the group and tackled them to the side. He yelled as the 4 of them collided against the wall, "Protect the others!" I looked up and saw that the other 2 ghouls were chasing the nurse and the stallion up the stairs. I galloped as fast as I could up after them. They both reached the control room box immediately and started pounding on the door in a frenzy. "Unseal the room! You have to let us out now!" They were panicked and scared beyond all reason, shoving aside the body of the chief engineer and undoing all the lockdowns from the engineering side. "No," I cried. But it was too late.
Oh no.
One of the other section chiefs unsealed the level with an administrative override, not realizing what he'd done. Just like with the Great War, it only took a few moments for everything to fall to pieces. You see, the rupture of the fuel tank and the decaying of the liquid crystal released not only a great deal of radiation, but pressure as well. The entire space, which had been under a full quarantine seal, had been building an internal pressure which had reached nearly 5 atmospheres. When the others undid those seals, they added the reactor chamber back to the stable's ventilation system. What followed was a roar, as if a group of Pegasi had started a hurricane in the room. The compressed radioactive atmosphere forced its way through the air ducts, bursting through the vent covers and flooding the entire stable in the horrible green haze.
And just like that, everything was contaminated?
Everything. Over the course of the week, enough of the crystal had atomized that the air was thick with the particulate. Once again, we had heard the screaming, but this time it was coming from the upper levels as the entire population of Stable 76 was covered in the radioactive mist.
But a few of you were safe. You still had on the full magical radiation suit, as did your assistants.
They did, but that didn't matter for long. After the distraction of the decompression, I looked down to see that my stallion assistant had been torn to pieces by the group of ghouls he had tackled. They bit and tore at him until he wasn't much more than a pile of tissue.
I'm so sorry. No one should have to experience nor witness such a death.
The poor soul. I turned away from the horrible sight to find that the other two ghouls had continued their chase of the stallion who nursed through the command box entryway. I continued up the staircase to follow them. But then while I was galloping on the catwalk to the other side of the room, I heard a loud metal lurching. I turned to my right and watched as the second fuel tank exploded. A large chunk of the shrapnel collided with the section of Vogelvay I was on, ripping it from the walls and landing on me in a heap 30 feet below. I had never felt so much pain in my life. I'd wished I had passed out or died instantly. The smaller glass shards tore my radiation suit to pieces while I was soaked in the liquid crystal that covered the red reactor piping. The sensation in my skin burned so deep, it felt like hot metal rods were being driven into my bones. I quickly scrambled to crawl out from below the wreckage. When I got free of the large chunks, I fell to my knees, due to the fact that two of my legs were broken, along with several ribs and vertebrae. I collapsed on the cold concrete ground, unable to move any longer. The last thing that I saw was a pulsing glow of the reactor, and the fuel from the second tank flowing towards me.
By the goddesses! I'm pretty sure that is the most incredible story anyone has ever told me about their own death. But somehow, not the first.
Well, you know, I never really thought of it like that before. Thank goodness. Luckily, that was more pain than I've ever had to experience again. I guess I ended up paying it forward, so to speak.
Really? You don't feel pain anymore?
It's not that I don't feel it. It just doesn't hurt. I could stab myself straight through my leg here, and it wouldn't feel like much more than getting poked with a pen. I would demonstrate, but you'll already have enough work decontaminating the room already.
It's nothing a little Abraxo soap and Radaway can't fix. And speaking of Radaway...
That is a very good idea. My radiant personality does tend to average between 1 to 3 rads per second.
Yuck. I'll never get used to that bitter orange aftertaste.